It's a very special members-only episode of the Presentable Podcast, and I'm your host, Jeff Veen. This week on the show, Relay FM co-founder Stephen Hackett talks about the recent redesign of their website. We discuss how creative work happens collaboratively, the usability of podcast discovery, and so much more. So let's get right to it. I feel like we have known each other for like a year, and this is literally the first time I've ever heard your voice, like, you know, besides listening to podcasts. Like, we've never met. But it's one of those.
Because you bailed on San Jose for some sort of PTSD reasons.
That's true. And I can explain. Because I was, you know, an employee of Adobe for many years, and Adobe has two offices, one in San Francisco, one in San Jose. And we were, this is true, this little behind the scenes, when I had my company Typekit and we were talking to Adobe about having them acquire us, one of the things we said in the like actual legal contracts was, we're not going to do this deal if we have to spend any more than some number of days in San Jose.
And we're very specific.
And we fought over the number of days, like back and forth with lawyers and everything. I'm like, I'm not going to San Jose. I live in San Francisco for a reason. So it was terrible. I mean, when I had to go there, it was like, you know, it'd take an hour and a half to get there sometimes. Which, yeah, I mean, you know, it could be another state for you probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm like, so I'm down in the corner of Tennessee. So Mississippi and Arkansas are both like 10 minutes away, which I try not to think about, to be honest with you. But, you know, in Memphis, Memphis, we're in the South, but Memphis is a very like Midwestern city. So you drive like everywhere. Everyone has a car. Everything is about 20 minutes away, you know, No matter where, what direction. And so when I go to the Bay Area, right, it's the same as home, as in there are lots of cars and stuff, but the number of people is so much bigger.
Yeah.
Like it really, I have no desire to ever move out there. I'm a homebody, and I like that I live, you know, 5 minutes from my brother and 20 minutes from my parents and in-laws, but
yeah,
you know.
And I'm guessing you probably didn't spend $1.5 million for 800 square feet.
No.
I'm guessing. That's just, you know, spitballing Memphis, here. I don't know that much about Memphis, but
it's super cheap to live here. It's great.
That's nice. I would be interested in just a little bit of background on you and Mike and Relay, because I have heard bits and pieces of it. And for context, so I live here in London now, see Mike from time to time, not just professionally, but like, you know, we hang out. It's kind of nice. But I don't know the whole story of how you guys got started and which bits you guys do of your company. And that is one thing that I'm always very interested in my podcast, which is like kind of the creation stories and who does what in the building of a product. So,
sure.
So where did you guys known each other for quite a while, I would imagine.
Yeah, we met in 2010. So way back then, I had already been writing about Apple and stuff on my blog for a couple of years. And this, we met around the release of the iPad. So he already had a tech show that's been erased on the internet, but he wanted to interview me about the iPad. So we, you know, did a little like kind of news interview show, and we just really hit it off. I'm sure you've had this experience where you get off a call with somebody or you come out of a meeting, you're like, I want to know this person better. I want to be their friend, or I want to see where this goes. And he and I both strongly had that about each other, even just after, you know, an hour long podcast. And so we sort of stayed in touch, and Mike had an itty bitty podcast network. It really was a network just because he wanted one website to log into as opposed to six for all of his different shows, which is totally understandable.
Sure.
So he kind of hobbled this thing together. And he and I started working on some stuff. You know, he would bounce ideas off of me. At the time, I was like, you know, like elbow deep in an IT career that kept me very busy. But he and I started doing some little projects together. The first show we ever did together, we've actually since relaunched on Relay. It's called Ingenious, where we talk about weird things on Wikipedia. Totally show. I don't know how. And so it just snowballed. You know, we started doing these projects together, and then he went and did shows on 5x5 for a couple years together. And the whole time, like, we're not business partners yet, but we are very much talking as if we are, like, I'd have this idea for my site or an idea for a book project, or he would have this idea about a new show, and we would just sort of conference together and talk through things.
Yeah.
And then we get into 2014, which he was just here, and we had the realization that we've been doing Relay, you know, like the amount of time in our friendship before Relay and post Relay is like starting to equalize, which is very strange. But we're like, hey, we want to do this on our own. And he didn't want to do it with anybody but me, and I felt the same way. And so we started kind of putting the building blocks together of like, well, what does a podcast company look like the way that we want to do it? And it just took off from there.
Ah, that's great. That's great. Well, it hasn't been that long, and yet probably feels like a long time for you guys. But I'll tell you what, your reputation absolutely was preceding you, because I got had a couple of people a couple years ago say, you know, this podcast thing, you should do that. You've had a lot of experience, and that would be interesting. And there's not, frankly, not a lot of podcasts about design. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to my pal Merlin Mann and said, what do you know about this podcasting? It seems like you're doing that all the time. And he told me a bunch and said, I should go after it. And he's like, and don't do it yourself. Just go to Relay FM and have those guys do it, do it for you. So he was speaking very highly of it, of you guys as well. And what you guys, it's clearly the passion that you guys have for it kind of bleeds through in everything you do.
Yeah, we care deeply about everything, everything in Relay. And we have, Mike and I are very similar, but what we work on in the company are different from each other. We have different skill sets, but the way that we operate is pretty similar. And so we both have the ability to like move into a conversation as co-founders and like, hey, we need to hash this out. And then, you know, and then kind of go back to talking about his wedding planning or something, right? Like, because we've known each other for such a long time, and some people are hearing that thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're in a company that way. But because Relay started as we were just a couple of guys who knew each other who wanted to like make stuff together, I really hope that that has come through in everything, that people who are now on the network feel like they're part of a family and part of a group of friends who make stuff together. Because that's really like, all we wanted to do was a place to host our stuff, and it has mushroomed way past that. But hopefully that's still like the essence of it.
You guys have an employee now and everything.
We do. We have an administrative assistant. I woke up to an email from her this morning. She's like, hey, I need you to sign this. I'm like, this is great. So I emailed her back. I was like, I am in bed, because she lives in the UK. And I was like, I need a little time to take a shower, but yes, I will sign it and return it to you. So yes, things happen even when we're asleep. It's great.
Yeah, there you go. That's the dream, really. That's the dream.
That's right.
Sun
never sets.
I have in my career both done consulting work and done product development work. And from a business perspective, the consulting work is great. It's sort of lucrative, because you go to a company and you do a certain amount of hours and they give you cash, and it's very straightforward. You know how much you're going to get, all that. The product stuff, you get no idea. We're building this thing. Hopefully people will want to buy it someday. But the difference is, with the consulting, you only get paid the moments you're doing the work. But that product stuff, once it's going, you wake up in the morning and see how many people bought stuff overnight, and it just feels like this thing is working and it's going on its own. And it's that idea of like waking up and work had been happening and stuff has happened and I didn't do it. Kind of the best feeling.
Yeah, no, totally. And you know, we have listeners all around the world. For a while, we were blocked in Russia. I'm actually not sure if that's still true. I got an email about it like a year ago, and I was like, there's literally nothing I can do about that. Like, I have no idea how to fix that.
The podcasts themselves, the feeds and everything. Like, you should aspire to that. Like, that's amazing.
I don't know what we did, but I'll blame somebody. But so it's so much bigger than we ever imagined it would be. And yeah, it's just nuts. Like, we have hosts around the world or listeners around the world, and you know, usually that manifests in funny ways. Like, for a long time, we were struggling with scaling the website and the back end, and generally things would only explode as I was sitting down for dinner. I've got a young family, I got three kids, and like, we'd be sitting down for family dinner on like Sunday night, and the web server would just, you know, blow its guts all over the floor and have to go in and put it back together. Yeah. And I was like, all right, this is what it's like when there's only two people.
But yeah.
That's part of it, I think.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we go on, maybe I'll give a little background, since, you know, this is a members only podcast, and I'm assuming there's some people here who haven't heard my podcast, but I spent a lot of time thinking about design. And that's what the Presentable podcast is about. I have been doing that for a very long time. So I started my career as a designer and kind of like HTML. We would call it front end developer now, but this is in 1994, and
it wasn't a name for it yet.
There was people. Well, they had webmaster was one.
Oh gosh, oh man,
I know. But yeah, so I did that at Wired Magazine in 1994. So 25 years ago or so, and from there, then like I spent a lot of time at Wired, like 6 years or so, and then into the 2000s, started a consulting company that did user experience consulting. So we didn't quite do like web design. It was more around the user research and usability testing and stuff like that. That was called Adaptive Path. We did some notable things, like coined the term Ajax for speaking of front end development. That was one of the things that we did back then. But we did a lot of the very sort of web 2.0 back in the days, like design work and things like that for sites like Flickr and Blogger and stuff like that. And then after that, I built a little product that got subsumed by Google and then went to Google, and that little product sort of became Google Analytics. And so that was one of the biggest like design projects I've done, was kind of from scratch building Google Analytics and then working on a bunch of other Google products for a while. Then built a company, Typekit, that I mentioned earlier, that we sold to Adobe and worked there for a while. But now, that's a lot of stuff. This is like going through my LinkedIn resume. I'm sorry about that. But now I work for a venture capital firm as a partner focused on companies that are doing design stuff or are founded by designers. And so very, very different, all new. I feel like a beginner in the middle of my career here. And so anyway, that's a kind of all of that stuff is kind of feeds into the podcast and talk to people about who the kind of people who run design at companies like Slack and Spotify and stuff like that. So it's fun. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I love the show. And you were rattling off your like you said, your LinkedIn page there, and I was like, yep, use that. Yep, use that. Yep, pay for that. So so in school, and I won't tell you how old I was in 1994, but when I was in college, I got a journalism degree, but at the time, the journalism school I went to, the concentrations were around the output. So you did like print concentration or web concentration, which in hindsight, and they've changed it now, seems really silly to me that like, yes, you're going to learn, you know, your basic writing skills, and then we're just going to teach you like one output. And now, of course, if you work as a journalist, you are responsible for getting your content everywhere, right?
As
newspapers and stuff shrink. But I spent 4 years, paid my bills in college of laying out newspaper pages in Court Express, which is not a super useful skill now, but it's something that you know, I sort of played designer and then moved into IT, and now I'm doing this. And I think if maybe you feel this way about your background, but I definitely feel it about mine of like, if you just looked at that list of things that I've done, it seems like I've really jumped around. And to a degree, I guess I have. But now that I'm doing my own thing, like each of those like time periods in my career or even my college years, like each of those things has built into what Relay has become. So yes, like I don't even think I have Court Express. Let's see. I don't think I have Court Express installed anymore. I don't. But but some of that background, right, of sort of faking it as a designer in school and then spending time in IT and spending time in project management, like those things all have rolled into and have helped Relay become successful because I've got that background.
For sure.
I think it's always interesting to like draw the dots in hindsight.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And by the way, I studied journalism in school as well. Before I worked at Wired, I worked in newspaper laying out pages in Quark Express.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Although I did it on an SE30.
Yeah, I did it on a Power Mac G4.
Yeah.
But I did newspaper in high school as well. And so really kind of high school for me was like I met all my passions. Like I met the Macintosh. I kind of learned about design and IT stuff and like the idea that I could use a computer as a tool to get the idea in my head out into the world.
Yeah.
But so my editor of the high school paper, we were up there early one morning getting the paper done. We published every 6 weeks, and then in college I published daily. So I kind of laugh at that now, but she started like freaking out, right? So I was like, oh my gosh, what happened? And she didn't know how she had done it, but there's an Easter egg in Quark where this little robot marches out from the side of the screen and it shoots your text box or image box with like a laser, then it gets deleted, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And she was telling me this. I'm like, come on, like, you're pulling my leg. Like, what are you talking about? And then like 4 years later in college, I did it, like, accidentally. I was like, oh my God, she wasn't, like, she was telling the truth, right? This is a thing. And I ended up Googling it and finding it. I had to like send her a Facebook message. I was like, hey, I'm sorry I called you a liar 4 years ago, because this is totally a thing. It's just like one of those, like, I would just love to meet the developer who like put that Easter egg in Quark and just like, I don't know. I love stuff like that in software design, but I'm sure project managers don't always.
Wasn't there for a time a flight simulator inside of Microsoft Excel?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think at some point the projects get so big that a whole other product inside of your product is just a little side thing that you do for fun.
Don't pay attention to what's over here in this corner.
Let's go find that Wikipedia page and put a link in the show notes about the Quark Express robot Easter egg thing, because I remember seeing that for sure. I would say that the work you did on newspaper design maps exactly to what we do on the web. Certainly my experience in that newspaper, there's two things about doing a layout for a newspaper. One is you have to be very conscious of visual hierarchy. And the second one is a tremendous amount of constraint. And for me, and those are two things that are incredibly important. You open up an app or a web page or anything, and you have all these levels of user attention that you get to kind of spend. So somebody looks at a page and instantly has a reaction to it. And then how long can you hold that attention while they sort of parse through what's there and try to figure out what's going to get them to what their goal is? And that's exactly what you do in the newspaper with like, what is most important? What is secondary to that? How do they work together to tell a story? And then like the constraint of newspapers is remarkable. I mean, my whole writing career for a few years when I was very early in my career was measured in inches. My editor would say to me, go do a story on this and give me 12 inches. You know,
yeah.
Because that's literally all the space it's going to fit, and so I think there's a lot of applications to what you and I were both doing that I know that I used throughout my career, and it sounds like you have as well.
Yeah, it's funny sometimes you think back on something and like I said, it's hard to do those lines in order, you know, kind of connect the dots, but of course there's other stuff that falls by the wayside, right? Like in college, the first semester I was there, the college paper was still doing paste up, right? So you print everything on your laser writer and then cut it out with an X-Acto knife and run it through a hot wax machine. Like no one who did newspaper design. well, we moved to full digital after my first semester, but none of us had fingerprints, right? Because you just burned the end of your fingers off on the wax rollers. But
I did that too. Yep.
Some of it's gone away, but the concepts are definitely still there.
Yeah. That's cool. You got your hands dirty doing proper design, old days, ink and stuff. That's great. you practice that a little bit. You guys have done a redesign of the relay.fm website.
We did. And I can't take really any amount of credit for it. So Relay, we have a designer on retainer, the mysterious Forgotten Towel on Twitter.
Forgotten Towel. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Forgotten is not his given name, but it's what he uses on the internet. Meet my newborn son. Forgotten. It's a real dark name for a kid. If you really sit and think about it for a second, but, so we'll call him Frank for the purpose of our conversation. So Frank actually, we've worked with since day one. And one of the biggest arguments Mike and I have ever had was what to name the network. Like, as I'm sure you know, naming stuff is just the worst. And we went round and round, and like we were building the site and like we were getting all the other stuff together. Like, it doesn't have a name yet. At some point, this is going to be really important. And Frank actually came up with the name Relay FM. And the idea was that, you know, like relaying of information, but another part of the idea, it shows in the logo a little bit of the idea of Mike and I like handing the company off, because there's six time zones in between us. And the idea we're talking about earlier, that like, if you're spread out, you know, the sun never sets on the podcasting empire. That's maybe a bad example, since my co-founder's British, but that idea of just like handing it off. And, So Frank's been instrumental since day one, but the first version of the website, Frank didn't do. We bought a CMS from somebody, and it kind of came with a basic web design, and we launched with 5 podcasts. And so we tinkered with it a little bit, but it was enough to get us out the door. And over the last 3 years, we've gone from 5 shows to almost 30. And the thing just didn't scale up. It was fine when there were 5 shows. It was probably fine when we had 10 shows, but as we got bigger and bigger, pages were getting longer. We added more stuff over time, and kind of before we knew it, it had evolved into this thing that nobody was happy with. And so we took the opportunity at the beginning of the year to say, look, we want to just completely wipe this thing away and build something that looks like the rest of Relay. So it looks like our iOS app and looks, you know, the show artwork looks at home on it. And really like you're talking about, like there's no hierarchy on the old site. It was very much something like a blog where the newest thing is on top and everything gets pushed down. And there's still elements of that now, but everything felt of equal importance. And now if you go to the homepage, for instance, the most recent episode is really big in the sidebar. And so it's like very easy to see the latest thing we published, and then the other one sort of cascade down. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time thinking through that, but most of that came out of Frank's brain.
Hmm. And so how do you two work together? Or you three, I guess.
Yeah. And we have a developer as well who actually lives in Memphis. He's local to me. And so we the answer is going to be Slack, right? The answer is always Slack. But generally how it works is we will talk to Frank about something that we want to do. So for the web project, it's like, you know, Mike and I spent about 3 months kind of talking over like, what are our goals out of a site redesign? What are things that we want to see? And not just design wise, but a lot of the redesign was about performance as well.
Mm.
The old site was slow in a lot of places. And so in this redesign is actually a lot of behind the scenes stuff to make the site faster. And we have a lot more of that that's parked in a branch on GitHub that's going to get pushed pretty soon. But so Mike and I outlined our goals and talked about some things. And then we sat down with Frank and said, you know, we want to do a redesign, but these are the sort of the sub goals to that. These are the things we want to see done. And he'll, you know, Frank will go off and work on some concepts. And then we kind of go back and forth and hone it from there. But very rarely has Frank returned to us with something that we just blow out of the water. I mean, a lot of our show art is like one of the first iterations is what we end up going with because he knows us so well. And because he's done all of it, he has a very strong voice in all of our visual design. And so it's not like we have somebody else who's trying to fit into a narrative that's already there. Frank wrote that narrative. And so he is very conscious of all the edge cases there. And even in the design, it's like one little thing that I love is if you go to individual podcast, the colors of the pages change. So like each podcast page feels like its own little website and help kind of break it up a little bit. And each podcast feels like it has its own home. And even like those colors are chosen. And as we started doing it, he was like, okay, I know that like these 4 or 5 shows, we're going to have to change the colors because they're really going to look crazy against the slate. And you know, he was right. And we went in and changed it. And, but for us, it's very important to have that cohesive voice because we want like Relay has a bunch of diverse voices on the network, right? And part of the fun thing about membership is everybody gets to hear all those voices sometimes for the first time. But we want, if you come across a Relay show, like I guess we're trying to get to is we have an audio product, but people discover it visually.
Yeah.
Right. As you scroll through Overcast or Apple Podcasts or Pocket Cast or whatever,
right,
you don't get to hear samples, you get to see the artwork. And so for us, it's really important to know if someone's scrolling through and they see a show that looks like Relays, that they know that like that brand means something. And they know that, okay, this podcast has this badge in the upper left-hand corner. I know that that brings a level of quality and consistency that I've come to learn and appreciate about other Relay shows. Mm-hmm. And so that's super important to us.
You have developed what we call a design system. And it's a system that has a vocabulary that, that people start to learn over time, that hopefully, if you do it well, has some values associated with it that you were just discussing. So I think you guys have done an excellent job at that.
Yeah, it's important because it's so fundamentally strange that you discover an audio product visually, like just that there's such a disconnect there. And I've even thought about what would it look like to like, what if, you know, so in the App Store, right, you have screenshots and they added a couple years ago, they added video. So you get to tap a video and see the app sort of come to life, right?
Right, right.
And developers use that to wildly different ways. And some of them aren't very good at it. Some of them are really good at it. But podcasting at this point doesn't have anything like that. And so sometimes I think about, like, what if there could be a trailer that someone's in Apple Podcasts and they hit play and they hear 30 seconds of you, you know, describing your show and, you know, little snippets of interviews and stuff. But there's not that. So all we have is that, you know, 1400 by 1400 square image of what is the cover art.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and cover art is really the sort of precedent, isn't it? Like album mm-hmm. covers and CD covers yeah. and things like that, that try to capture what the music in the historic case, like what yeah. the music is going to be like, or who this performer is, or is this something that you are identifying with? Right.
So maybe what you're saying is we need more like super dramatic photos of our hosts, right? So like it's the artwork, and underneath is like a picture of Federico Vittici and Fraser Spears, like hugging iPads for Canvas
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm gonna write that down.
With tigers around them or something, for sure.
Jeff said this was a good idea. All right, it's down. It's written down.
Good. Yeah. Approved. Ship it. I think the very traditional way of thinking about design, which is visual elements on a page or an interface or something, you know, colors and fonts and icons and stuff like that. I have a much deeper understanding of design. I have my whole career. For me, it's much more about a process in which humans are involved in the decisions that product teams are making. That's why I've always kind of called it user experience. But the thing that you were just describing that Frank was doing for you, which is the visualization of a bunch of abstract ideas in a way that really resonates right away for you, is a whole nother aspect of design that I think is hugely misunderstood and insanely valuable, where you can literally have a conversation about some like business idea or goals that you have for your company or for your product. And somebody else goes off and comes back and says, you mean this? And you're like, oh my God, how did you? Yes. You know, that kind of thing. I've spent a lot of time in my career doing just that, sitting around with usually like the executives of big businesses where they talk in very kind of abstract and jargon laden ways, and be able to go off, kind of synthesize everything I heard and show them a picture of what I think they mean. That's an incredibly valuable thing to be able to do. So I'm glad you guys have somebody like that. It's hard to find somebody as well that can do that.
Yeah, and we met Frank because there's a show now. It's called Bonanza, and that show pre-existed when we were on 5x5. It was called Bionic, and it started as a show about like ecosystems and platforms, but quickly devolved into a comedy show in which Mike Hurley and Matt Alexander were designing a volcano in which to like train supervillains or something. And out of that sort of comedy stuff, you know, comedy in particular like inspires fan art and stuff. And so Frank was just all of a sudden, we were getting these emails and tweets with like posters of something they said on the show. And it was all incredibly done and really funny. And so he was a listener, and we kind of, you know, got to know each other some as Bionic went further and further off the rails. And if you haven't listened to Bonanza, dear Relay FM member, you should go check it out. It's bonkers. But it was like, hey, clearly he's super invested in what we're doing. And it was incredibly humbling and flattering, and it still is when I think about it. But he got us, and he got our, you know, like you said, the ability to take an idea or I mean, sometimes when we go to him for a show idea, like we just have the name and the hosts, and it's still very rough of what the show is going to be. And he can help shape that through the visual design. Or if a show changes or if a show, you know, winds down and something replaces it, you know, being able to navigate all those circumstances mm-hmm. is something he can do because we've spent so much time together. And for 3 years, he's done all Relay stuff. And we're super lucky to have him. And it's definitely something that I'm just so thankful for, because he has that ability, and he just gets it.
Yeah, yeah. It seems it's reminiscent of relationships I've had in my career. There's just a small handful of very good visual designers with incredible attention to detail that I've worked with over the years. I mean, really count them on one hand, and I've worked with them over and over again, and those relationships are incredibly valuable. How did you, so he was doing visual design, and mock-ups and things like that. Are you more on the technical side building things?
So, I mean, we have a developer. So for the Relay project, I sort of played project manager, which was my last like career step before leaving my job to work on podcasts for a living, which my in-laws still aren't sure are a thing. But, so I spent the last 2 years of my sort of day job life at a web agency as director of projects.
Okay. And
so,
got it.
So I was sort of able to, you know, keep, and Jason, our developer, and Frank, they communicate directly. They work really well together. Frank also does some front end development. So he was doing a lot of it too. And so there's not much code that I wrote or much CSS that I wrote that's in this site, but sort of the, you know, we have to, what we need to prioritize and keeping, I guess you'll hear this, but sometimes Mike gets excited about certain things. And so I have to like rein him in. And so very early on, I was like, hey, you know, I'm going to be sort of the runner for this project, and we're just going to keep everybody at bay. And it's, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to a redesign. You know, I think when we set out initially, it wasn't going to be as deep as it ended up being, especially on some of the back end stuff to our CMS that we ended up doing. But, so I'm not necessarily a developer either, but sort of keeping all the trains running on time is where I excel. And, it definitely, there's definitely a lot of trains and even a redesign that, you know, seemed simpler when we started out.
Oh God, no, nothing is, everything seems simple when you start, but the, our ability as humans to estimate is, remarkably poor.
It's so true.
I think the rule of thumb that earlier in my career we used to talk about was when you ask an engineer how long something's going to take, you need to double it and then go to the next order of magnitude. So if they say a couple hours, 4 days. They say a couple weeks, 4 months, you know. So and that's always been the case. So it seems like probably a lot of work for you guys, huh?
Yeah, and you know, we took our time with it. We in the back of our mind, we wanted to launch it in August, which is, you know, Relay's anniversary. But we really started, Mike and I really started talking at the beginning of the year because we had all these problems with the old site. And I felt like before we can address them, we actually really need to know what those problems are. So it's easy to say, well, I don't like this page, or I don't like the way, you know, this workflow works for a user. But it's a different thing to like actually dive down into what that is, right? It's easy just to complain and write it off. But so we spend a lot of time of like, you know, if I'm a new user or, you know, a new visitor and I want to subscribe to a show, which is like the thing, right? Like that's the action we want the user to take. Well, on the old site, because stuff had been added to it over time, that was actually way harder than it should have been. And sort of like pretty far down on the page, especially on mobile. And so I was like, okay, that's a really clearly defined problem. How do we address it? Well, we want the subscribe buttons to be, you know, more distinct. We want them to be at the top of the page. We want it to be clearer what you're doing. And we just started going through each section of the site and saying, what don't we like about this versus what's actually wrong with this? What should we do to improve it? And really like having our arms around what we wanted to do, as opposed to just saying, yeah, we've had it for 3 years and we just think it's time for a change.
So that's interesting, right? Because it seems like, I thought about this a little bit with podcasting, that there are kind of two functions that you probably had in mind. One was discovery, which we're talking about, like, how do I find the podcast I want to listen to? How do I find other ones from this network and things like that? So that's kind of navigation around the site, exposing things and stuff like that. But then the other is consumption. Right? Like, how do I actually engage with podcasts? Which, to be honest, is still, I think, pretty cumbersome. And I don't mean that about your site. I just mean in general, like, there'll be plenty of times when I'm on Twitter and somebody's like, hey, there's a new podcast. And I'm like, ooh, I want to subscribe to that. Oh, you know, especially if I'm on my phone. And like, so I tend to like look at the name of the podcast and launch Overcast and search for it and hope it's in there. And like, it just doesn't, it feels like we haven't quite gotten there yet when it comes to how we actually, you know, see a podcast we want to subscribe to and make that all just seamless and integrated, let alone get some like sample of whether I want to listen to it or not, web-based players and all that business. Pretty complicated still.
It is. And there are things that can make it better. So like our subscribe links, we have sort of the major podcast players that people use. And we have the flexibility now. We didn't before of actually adding more of those. So if some new, you know, some new service or app just blows up, we can add those links. But yeah, it is cumbersome, and it I don't know how much that's, you know, there's a lot of debate about, like, is that hurting the podcast industry? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it is. I think people who are going to listen to podcasts are going to figure it out, and it is easier than it used to be. But yeah, it's just that weird dichotomy again of like the visual versus audio. But I think hopefully we've done a good enough job where it's as easy as it can be.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think so. It does feel like podcasts are like video before YouTube. You know what I mean? And I don't mean to imply that there should be just, I mean, geez, Apple has something like 80% of the listening in their native app, don't they? Isn't it something like that?
Yeah, it's real high.
Yeah. But it's almost it's certainly not a vital part of their business. I think it's just a thing they want to make sure the phone has and can do. And so they're in that business. But it still feels like there's some kind of tipping point to where podcasting and the consumption of it, the discovery of all of that is just purely mainstream, where it is as easy as somebody tuning into NPR on a radio has been in the past, you know?
Yeah, and stuff like CarPlay and Android Auto,
yeah,
I think are helping that, yeah, at least for people who listen on their commute. And mm-hmm. That's where I think a ton of podcast listening happens.
Yeah.
I know when I gave up my commute, I had to give up some podcast listening just as a single point of data.
Yeah. But
you know, Apple does control a lot of the landscape. And for a network like ours, which is very tech heavy, that's really not true. Most of our listeners are listening on third-party apps because we have those nerdy listeners who want this single feature that's found in Overcast or Pocket Cast or something.
Yeah.
But on the whole, Apple Podcasts definitely sort of has the bulk of listenership. But so far, at least, Apple's been a pretty good steward of that. So this summer, they announced additions to the podcast feed standard, which podcasting is just built on RSS. And so there's some new tags you can put in that do seasons and stuff. And Apple said, we're going to support this, but here's the spec. And so hopefully, you know, Overcast and Podcast and these other players will add that over time. And so Apple's been pretty good about that. Now, hopefully that continues to be the case. I don't think Apple wants to become the YouTube for podcast,
right,
but for a lot of people, that's kind of already the case. And they've been, I think, as responsible as they can be about that.
I think they
do want podcasting to remain open and on an even playing field.
Yeah. But you guys have to kind of keep your eyes on all of that as you think about the experience at the Relay website and whatnot. And you mentioned an iOS app as well. You guys put some effort into that, huh?
Yeah. So we worked with TapJet, and they've got the system that you can load in your content to an iOS app. And so that's really just built around the live streaming and like the most recent episode of each show. So we didn't want to build a podcast client. We don't want to compete with Overcast or Podcast again, because we think podcasting should be open. But it's a really great way to listen live if a show that you're interested in streams live. And only about a third of our shows do. Most of them don't. But for those who do, you can get a little push notification, hit play, and listen to something like Upgrade or Connected live as it's being recorded. And that's really kind of the focus of the app. It's really not meant to be a full featured client by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. How did your experience with building web stuff translate over to that? I found that hard a few years ago as well.
Yeah, for me, I hadn't ever done anything in the app ecosystem at all. My old job, we were all web. So for me, it was like, okay, it felt very limiting at first of like, you know, I still think of, and I was probably a little guilty of this during our redesign, and Frank and others helped correct it. I tend to think desktop first. And that may just be that I'm at that age still, but that's sort of my, okay, how's it look on the desktop? But obviously you don't have that on an iOS app. And so with the website and the app, for me, it was very much of like, I need to think about the constraints that come with this and embrace them. And so for what's nice about TapJet is their front end stuff in the app, a lot of it uses web technology. So like all those interactions and stuff are all done basically within like the WebKit framework. So some of that stuff kind of came naturally, and there's stuff on the website now that came out of the iOS app, even some of the same interactions and sort of same look and feel. But for me, it was like, okay, this is something that I just hold in the palm of my hand, and you know, what makes sense here is going to be different than what makes sense on the web. And it was very educational. I very often, during that time period, would have an idea, and either Frank, who was involved, or the Tap Jazz guys, Chris Harrison, those guys, were like, you know, that's fine, but like, think about these other considerations as well. And it was super eye opening to me that just how many decisions are so different when all you have is that, you know, that little slab of glass in your hand, as opposed to something that has to expand all the way up. You know, I'm talking to you on a 27 inch iMac. It's humongous, right?
Yeah.
So they present their own challenges, but it was super educational and honestly a lot of fun to think about this, about, you know, how do we shove the Relay brand into something that is this size.
Right.
And I think a lot of that work has paid off now on the website.
Oh, I find it incredibly kind of clarifying, like when you have such a limited form factor, to think, all right, what is the absolute essence of what we're trying to do here, which is what you should be doing in any product development or design project at all, in general. It's just think, like, what is the core user tasks we're trying to get through here? Everything else you kind of have to abandon. I know the last couple projects that I did, which, you know, when I was doing actual work before I became a boring old investor, the last couple we did 100% mobile first. We're not going to look at desktop at all, and just focused on what the mobile experience would be for sign up and editing and all, you know, for the various products we were working on. And I find it incredibly difficult at first, but then sort of got my feet and got used to it. And again, another one of those examples of like, oh my God, I didn't think I would be this far into my career and feel like a beginner again. But I don't know. I think that's a pretty healthy thing to experience once in a while.
Yeah, I think so. And it's something too that for me, at least, having, because my background was just newspaper design, right?
Yeah.
So I was so used to thinking about things a certain way, and it's been a lot of fun to break out of that and to think about things, you know, like you said, like, this is just like, how do you get it as simple as possible? And like, yes, I was thinking about that in the newspaper days, but with a very sort of different filter set to get down to what it needed to be. And I think it's interesting that, as we've done Relay over 3 years now, like, how many times there are things that I think I know, or I think I'm good at, that when I come across people who actually do it and who are really good at it, that I just get to sit back and watch and hopefully learn and not get in their way. But it's just so refreshing to me to like work with really talented people and to see them care about something that Mike and I built, like, as much as we do. You know, I mean, Frank and Jason and Chris Harris, all these people we've worked with, they care about the website every single iota that I do.
Yeah.
They really do. And that's just, I mean, it's just incredible.
Well, that's craft. And that's something that I always look for in the people that I work with, is that attention to detail, that passion for what they practice. And I like that a lot. So, yeah. Well, good. Hey, the site looks great. I'm glad you guys are thriving. I look forward to the redesign you have to do when you have 100 shows.
No. Oh, no.
But hey, I really appreciate you also taking a little time to kind of look behind the scenes, pull the curtain back and see how things are going at Relay FM. So thanks for that. And thanks for being on the show.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And that's another episode of Presentable. Hey, got any questions? You can email us at hello@presentable.fm or get in touch via Twitter by following Presentable FM. We hope you've really enjoyed the show. And if you do, could you take a moment and give us a rating on iTunes? It really helps and we'd really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. And until next time, I'm Jeffrey Veen, and this was Presentable.